Welcome to TFP, the Theater Folk Podcast, the place to be for drama teachers, drama students, and theater educators everywhere. I'm Lindsay Price, resident playwright for Theater Folk. Hello, I hope you're well. Thanks for listening. Welcome to episode 139. You can find any links for this episode in the show notes at theaterfolk.com/episode139. And I'm going to start this episode with a question. What motivates you when it comes to your students? For today's podcast guest, Josh Adele, a teacher out of California, it was the time and time connection he was seeing between teens, violence, and mental illness. And being a drama teacher, he wanted to theatricalize this issue. And the result was an experience that sparked incredible conversation about an often silent issue with students, parents, administration, and the community. I think talking about issues through theater is it's such a powerful thing. And I also wanted to start off with a quote from a blog Josh wrote about his experience. Talking about mental illness through theater is a life-affirming exercise that can help lead to mental health. For some, the experience can be life-changing. So let's get into some more talking with Josh Adele. Today, I am talking to Josh Adele. Hello, Josh.
Hi, how are you?
I am awesome. And you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. I'm excited to talk.
That's always a good start, isn't it?
For sure.
Okay, so tell everybody where you are.
Well, I am in North Hollywood, California. I teach at a private school called Campbell Hall, and we are a K through 12 school, and I teach in the high school here. I teach three levels of theater courses, and I direct two main stage plays a year, one in the fall and one in the spring, and I oversee an evening of student-directed performances as well.
Awesome. It's a full plate.
It is. It's a full plate, and it keeps me really busy for 9 months. And then for 3 months, I spend time in my pajamas getting ready for the next 9 months.
It takes 3 months, doesn't it?
Oh, totally. It really does. Absolutely.
So talk about how you landed into teaching. What led you to follow the path of drama and education?
Well, I loved my high school theater department. I grew up in Dallas, Texas, and I went to high school at J.J. Pierce High School, which is actually in Richardson, Texas. And I just fell in love with theater. I was a drama kid, and it really saved my life and just gave me a home. And I knew it was what I wanted to do. And the day after I graduated high school, I started my very first teaching job, teaching theater to five-year-olds, and also teaching a marionette puppetry class to kids, and I had no clue what I was doing at all, but it was very telling of which path I would go down. I think that I started, you know, at 8 a.m. at the Richardson Recreation Center the day after I graduated high school.
I gotta tell you, that's diving in deep. That is a choice in the making. If right after high school, acting, but teaching.
And
I love that.
Yeah, it was an incredible experience, and I just felt so deeply passionate about those little five-year-olds, and I wrote them a little play, and they performed it in the park. We had a little dinner theater situation, and it was really terrific. And I was fortunate enough to be able to go to New York University and study theater. And I taught every summer when I was back home in Dallas. And after college, I moved out to Los Angeles, where I did a lot of theater, acted in a lot of theater, and acted in a little bit of film and television. But I always taught to pay the rent, and I loved it. And after about 10 years, it got to a point where I would be disappointed if I had to find a substitute for my class. Because I either had an audition or a TV job. It was like I was generally sad and felt like I would really miss the kids a lot. So I decided to I called my agent and said, I'm out. I'm going into full-time teaching. And there just happened to be an opening here at Campbell Hall, and I've been here for 14 years now.
You know, there's always that moment when you're going to change your life, and you've got it's the two roads diverged, and it's always amazing when you realize that, because I wanted to be an actor when I was a teenager, and I had that moment when I realized it wasn't what I really wanted.
Yeah,
you know, and what made me get up in the morning. And it really sounds like you had that experience too.
Big time. I totally did. And when I graduated college, my graduation gift from my my parents was a trip to Russia, where I would volunteer for the summer teaching theater to kids. And if I look back at all of the major events in my life, teaching was always a major part of it.
That is some gift from your parents.
Yeah.
Go to Russia and then teach. That's pretty awesome. See, they knew before you did.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It was totally amazing. And I have to say the past 14 years have gone by so fast. I've learned more about theater and acting and directing and playwriting than I think I ever did outside of school, you know, in the quote unquote real world. Mm-hmm. I feel so equipped with just a vast and deep theater education that, you know, it's a gift to be making theater all day long. I just am so fortunate.
It's pretty awesome to look at it that way too, and to never look back at the choice that you have made with, oh, woulda, coulda, shoulda, and it's like, no, this was the path.
Yeah, absolutely. And I adore my students. I'm still in touch with many of my students who are now older than I was when I started the job here. And I am a very fortunate dude.
Okay, so, well, let's get into the main part of what we're talking about today, in which you wrote a play called The Mental State for your students. And there's a lot of different things I want to get into. So the first thing is, you wrote a play for your students. So when was it that you made that switch, in that it wasn't just you were going to be teaching drama and education, you wanted to make something very specific for your students, and you wanted to take on writing. Had you had written before?
Yeah, I had. I'd written before some short plays for younger students, and some short plays for classwork. But I was starting to get, I don't know if it was an itch or, but I started to feel like, you know, it's a real struggle to find the perfect play for any given year. I mean, there's so many factors that are involved. You know, who are the upperclassmen? how many males, how many females, and, you know, if it's a musical, you know, who, you know, how's the string section this year in the orchestra, and how many plays have we done that have been set in New York City, and, you know, I mean, my goal is to have a, for every 4 years to have a diverse selection of, mm-hmm. of plays and styles, so that, you know, a high school kid will have tasted a little bit of everything, so that they're prepared for what's out there next, you know, so that they've built, you know, somewhat of a range by the time that they graduate here. So I'm starting to feel like I, you know, I love directing, and I love, I mean, the material out there, there's a wealth of brilliant dramatic literature out there, but I'm starting to feel like there's something I feel like I want to say, and I feel like these students are the perfect people to say it. So I spent about a year sort of kicking around ideas, and then there was a series of mass shootings in you know, Colorado, and then mm-hmm. Newtown. And it, about a week after Newtown, my body just said, you absolutely have to write something for your students and for this community here at Campbell Hall. And it became something that I just could not stop thinking about constantly. It was the first thing I thought of in the morning when I opened my eyes. It was the last thing I thought of when I went to sleep. So I spent about I spent a couple months just journaling and reading everything I could, and I put together a proposal for my administration.
Right.
It was about a 5-page proposal, and it talked about some general story ideas. I talked about why I felt this was important for the community. I felt like I wrote about why some of the research I would be doing, and that this would be a 2-year writing project that, you know, hopefully I would direct in the fall of 2014, which I did this past fall. And the administration has always been incredibly supportive, and that's another thing I'm so fortunate to be, you know, around.
In a good space.
Oh, man. I mean, they are so, so trusting and open-minded, and they want our kids to be challenged, you know, emotionally and psychologically and spiritually. And so they said, go for it.
The best thing and the most terrifying thing, isn't it? Because if they had said no, you could have been like, okay, I tried. And it's like, okay, now I have to write the thing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I remember I went home, I told my wife, I said, yeah, they're all for it. And she looked at me and she said, what's wrong? So, yeah. And so that's, and then I wrote the thing. I spent the summer of 2013 writing, at the end of the summer, I held a workshop reading. It was actually a 2-day workshop with about 30 alumni from Campbell Hall who were back from their various college programs, and that was unbelievably helpful. I mean, the feedback I received was so smart and intelligent and consistent, and it really gave me the confidence and the tools to really create what I felt was a good production draft or rehearsal draft.
Okay, so at this point, you're writing about mental illness.
Yeah,
What was your, in your first draft, what was your sort of your thesis? What was your drive?
Well, the idea, really the controlling idea was that there are so many components that go into what drives teenage violence. And we don't, when we read the news stories, we do not know what those components are, all of them. We make our judgments and we either write someone off as crazy or we blame, mm-hmm. We blame, you know, firearms in America, or we you know, and the media is very quick to pick one angle, and the politicians are quick to pick one angle and drive that home. And I mean, you take a step back and, I mean, it's so many factors that go into this one explosive or tragic event, like socioeconomic realities, the education system, the community health system, and what kind of funding that gets from the state and the federal government, the familial dynamic, what's going on with the parents, what's going on with any siblings, and the fact that this country has been at war since 9/11 factors into a lot of the psychological realities. So the play was motivated by this mass shooting, but it really became a sort of, I guess, a tapestry of all the conditioning forces that can lead to this final result. Mm-hmm. And I did a lot of research on serious mental illness, and there are a lot of people, and there are a lot of teenagers who need help and who don't have the resources to get it. And I was hoping that with this play, I could make people aware of that and motivate people to, you know, to vote for politicians who support mental illness research or funding for community mental health centers. Or I could motivate people to get involved with the National Alliance on Mental Illness, or simply to have teenagers perform this play and feel like they're not alone.
Yeah.
That their voice can be heard. And I really realized that when we started the rehearsal process.
Yeah, it's always amazing to me. I really think that the best issue plays have to speak on two levels, in that issues are always epic, you know, and particularly something like this, which has as you say, so many factors and so many arms that you could go down. And then what it really boils down to is, can a character on stage speak to someone in the audience, and somewhat that little light bulb just goes on and says, he or she is saying exactly what's in my head, and I didn't think that was possible.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I find that a big responsibility as a playwright.
Mm. Yeah. I was very nervous. I was nervous. I did not want to come off as insensitive toward this subject matter. I did not want any sort of messages to be confused. During the rehearsal process, I had kids come up to me and say, you know, I have a family member, or my dad has a brother, or, you know, I didn't know if you know this about me, but I've been in therapy for years. Mm-hmm. And through the rehearsal of this play, students started to become very comfortable and very open in talking about whether it was, you know, OCD or ADHD or someone in their family who has a serious mental illness, such as, you know, bipolar with psychotic features or schizophrenia. And there was a real openness, which I didn't anticipate happening, but the breaking down of the stigma was just organically happening because we were surrounding ourselves with this subject matter. Mm-hmm. And then when we performed the play, I was so moved by the audience's reaction. And the goal was to create a discussion here on campus about serious mental illness and teen violence. And I had just audience member after audience member come up to me and say the same thing. Wow, you know, I have a brother who has dealt with this for years and years and years. Or, you know, I'm a lawyer and I work in the LA County system, and you wouldn't believe, you know, the cases we deal with where there's no help for people with serious mental illness. And so there was quite a conversation, and it was very, very moving. It was quite an experience.
Well, that's kind of, I always like to say that the last page of an issue play is what happens after the play's over.
So true.
What's the discussion that's going on? What's the conversation? And that's where I get, I just get so worried about places that don't want to talk about the issues that teenagers are going through. And they're just like, okay, if we don't talk about it, it's not happening, you know?
Yeah.
And about how amazing conversation is.
Yeah.
And particularly with teenagers. And so having them open up like that, I was just talking to a teacher who she was doing an issue play, and it was unexpected for her as well that the students really opened up, and she was unprepared to sort of handle that aspect of it. And so how did you handle the students opening up and sharing this very private topic with you?
Well, the program I run here, I teach a lot of Stanislavski-based work and Lee Strasberg method work, and a lot of emotion comes out. It's kids are sort of aware of that. That's a strong component of the program. Kids are laughing hysterically or sobbing from minute to minute in classes and in rehearsal, and they get into the program because of that component, because they need to explore their emotions. They need to express their really strong feelings. And so it was, I think, a terrific relief to have kids open up about the issue of mental illness. Whether they were directly affected by it or indirectly affected by it, it was a huge relief. It felt like we were right at home in this material, and I was so grateful to them for reading the material and responding and really listening to the material and then sharing it back with me. It was really a beautiful experience, and I was so grateful. And I remember we did the Laramie Project about 5 years ago. Oh my God, I think it was more like 9 years ago. Anyway,
all the time it just passes.
It goes fast, and I tell you, I was shocked then too with the way that the students read the material, listened to it, connected with it, and shared it back with me and then with their audience. And I agree. I mean, I know that there are administrators out there who feel like, well, it's better not to talk about it because then we won't be responsible for something that could happen. Or we're afraid that if we talk about it, something bad's going to happen. But I tell you, the administrators who understand that the art of conversation and dialogue and honesty and authenticity, that they understand that the rewards from that are so profound and so deep. I mean, our campus in the past 15 years has changed so much because the administration supports really open dialogue here. And if there is an administrator listening, I hope that you would trust that maybe you can trust that open dialogue is a huge benefit for the health and well-being of the community.
Yeah, and nothing good comes from silence.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah. So what a wonderful experience this has been. It's pretty a roller coaster 2 years.
Yes, it has, and I can't wait to try it again. I've got so many ideas running through my head, and I'm thinking about, you know, and the beauty is I didn't have to rush it. I won't have to again whenever I settle on something I want to write. You know, I'm here and I have no plans to go anywhere, and so it'll happen in its organic amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So as we wrap up here, so what advice do you have for someone listening, a teacher who is, they are in the same boat, in the same struggle, they can't find the play that works for their students, but they're afraid to take that step and write something perfect for their group that might be very beneficial for their group? What advice do you have for them?
Oh, that's a great question. I would say that nobody knows your students and your theater and your community better than you do as the theater teacher there. You know your theater students. You probably know more about them than their parents do, maybe. You certainly spend a lot more time with them. And so listen to them and know that, listen to them and you know what their needs are. You know what their needs are artistically, but you also know what their needs are emotionally, and you know what they need to say, and then trust that they want material. They want your material, and high school kids are so open and willing to try things. They have so much to say, and if you write in a way that will honor them, which you can because you know them, they will be there, and they will do wonders for your play that you would never imagine.
I think that kind of ties it up in a nutshell. Write in a way that honors your students.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like that's really all you have to do, right? In their voice.
Yeah.
And you know them, so you hear their stories all day, every day.
So true. So true.
Yeah. Awesome. This has been lovely. I really, I know when we exchanged emails that I was like, no, this is a story that, is a really great one to share. And, congratulations on your journey.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. I'm so grateful for the opportunity. It feels so good to talk about it.
Awesome.
It's therapeutic for me to talk about it. And thanks for the support and the encouragement. It means a lot to me.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lindsay. Have a great day.
Thank you, Josh. For any links from this episode, go to theaterfolk.com/episode139. You know, I just had a conversation with some teachers whose school board policy seems to be, when it comes to issues, is no talking. For example, plays about suicide are not allowed. They're not allowed to happen. And I don't know, that just seems to be for the benefit of administrators rather than students. It just seems to me, it's ludicrous to me to say, oh, well, you know, we can't have that because, you know, if it triggers somebody, if it triggers somebody, what? You know, like maybe there can be a conversation. Maybe when you do an issue play, maybe you like have social workers. Maybe you have people they can talk to so they don't feel alone. Instead of going, oh, no, we just won't do it. We won't do it. So, you know, if we don't talk about it, it doesn't happen. I'm sure there are many of you out there who are dealing with the exact same thing. It just drives me batty. Before we go, let's do some theater folk news. So on this whole topic, I really just wanted to mention a recent added issue play of ours, without the singing that I usually do. It doesn't really seem appropriate. So, but check out The Butterfly Queen by Christian Kiley. So The Butterfly Queen opens with a sound of gunshots and a teacher telling her students to hide so that when the shooter comes into the classroom, she's the only one he sees. So the play is not so much about that specific experience, but it's about the notion of sacrifice. What will you do to help others? Do you have the capacity to put others before yourself, despite the consequences? It's a play that starts a conversation, and further to that has beautiful physical component that I think makes the whole thing a vivid theatrical experience, both for actors and for the audience. So I've got a link in the show notes for The Butterfly Queen, and you can also go to theaterfolk.com and read sample pages. Finally, where oh where can you find this podcast? We post new episodes every second Tuesday at theaterfolk.com and on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us on youtube.com/theaterfolk, and you can find us on the Stitcher app. You can also subscribe to TFP on iTunes. All you have to do is search for the word theaterfolk. And keep talking. I think that's the only thing I have to say. I don't know what silence helps. And that's where we're going to end. Take care, my friends. Take care.